Welcome to another episode of A Minute Till Six. I'm your host, Mark Haynes, also known as MH the Champ, along with my co-host,
Chris Perry. You can find me at chris.perrysr.
And today, we got a very special person in the building. Well, not in the building, but on this interview. He's a Florida legend, Heisman Trophy winner, first round draft pick. If you don't know yet, it's Mr. Charlie Ward, man. Thank you for coming on and jumping on this interview with us, Charlie.
Hey, I appreciate you guys very much giving an opportunity to be on A Minute Till Six. What is that? How did y'all come up with that name?
Yes, sir. I'll let Chris Perry go with that one.
A Minute Till Six. It's a subtle nod to the city from which we come, which is Fresno, California. 559 is the area code. 559, 1 minute till six.
Yeah, we originally started dropping every episode at 5:59, so that's how that came about. and if I didn't clarify earlier, I said first round draft pick. I meant first round NBA draft pick. You're one of the we might as well start there. You're one of the few athletes. I can't even say player because two sport athletes in college at the Florida State. Let me get it right.
Fixed that real quick.
Yeah. The Florida State Seminoles playing basketball 4 years and football at the same time. How was Florida State one of the only colleges that was going to allow you to play both sports? Is that part of the reason why you picked them?
They're the only school or only Coach Bowden was the only coach that was recruiting me that had allowed guys to play basketball and football. And so that was a significant decision, factor in my decision to attend Florida State because of that situation. Brad Johnson played football, he's a quarterback, and he played basketball for years. He just continued playing basketball to focus on football. But I knew if he was going to allow Brad to play basketball, that he would allow me to play. And he kept his word. He's a Christian coach. And so he was fair and honest with me during the recruiting process. And, of course, during that time, you just have to trust that they're going to do what they say in recruiting, because as you know, in recruiting, sometimes they tell you what they want you to hear. And then once you get to campus, you have to make a decision on, whether they're going to let you play or not. But, I was grateful that he kept his word and I was able to play both sports.
Definitely. And also what a lot of people don't know about you, which when I was doing my research and, prepping for this and stuff, I found out that not only were you a dual sport player, you were, well, technically I seen quadruple, but you were drafted in three different sports, which was you got drafted twice in baseball. And what was your, was baseball just kind of, I played baseball as well at, coming up until high school, and then I stopped. And for me, baseball was just – you didn't get that same feel as basketball and football or whatever. It was kind of hard, I'd say, to be passionate about that. What was your reason for, passing up on them two times that you got drafted in baseball?
I came up playing all sports in elementary all the way up through high school. And I played baseball like fifth and sixth grade or middle school years in the YMCA, Y League. Mm-hmm. And that was fun, to do. And then I only played baseball 1 year in high school. And that was because of injury, my freshman and sophomore year. But you know, baseball was something I didn't even play in college, and then, you know, ended up getting drafted, you know, twice, my junior and senior year. And so it was really never a major option. It was just an option just in case something else didn't pan through or come through. So it wasn't really something I thought about, you know, doing, because I was, one year I was like 59th round, and then next year I was like 19th round. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it wasn't like Kyler Murray, you know, where he's a first round pick, where he had to make a choice on whether he was going to play baseball or football or basketball, whatever the case may be. But that wasn't my situation.
Awesome, awesome. So, I mean, it's well documented that it definitely was a great decision to pass on those two baseball drafts, because you went on to win the Heisman Trophy at Florida State. But you became one of, I think it's only 16 Heisman Trophy winners that didn't go pro to the NFL. Was that something, would you have chosen football if you were drafted higher or drafted at all, excuse me? Would you have chosen football over basketball?
Well, my whole thing deal with NFL was I chose to complete my senior year of basketball, which meant that I was going to miss the combine, which, of course, that just says that you're not interested. But I went through the other process with the NFL, their draft day, pro day on campus. Had some conversations with some clubs, some teams. The next day, did personal workouts for a few teams that were interested. And, you know, that was the extent of the process for the NFL. And so, you know, but during that time, I was putting a lot of time into perfecting my skills as a basketball player, because that's where I was behind the most. And so I put a lot of time and effort into that. Pro day went okay. You know, I didn't do anything spectacular, but, you know, I had a lot of film out there, and, you know, I really didn't prepare like I should have for the pro day. I did go out and throw on occasions, but I really didn't prepare for it. But I knew going in that, you know, they told me I was going to be a third or fourth round draft pick. I don't know if I could have improved my stock at any time. But during that time, I knew that being a first round pick as a black quarterback and my height wasn't something that was going to, you know, be – it wasn't prevalent during that time. And, you know, and so the black part may have been not an issue, but the height and all the other things that they said I didn't have probably was a factor, especially in the first round, which, you know, if I had gotten dropped in the first round in the NFL draft, I would have played football. Because that's, you know, that's one of the places where, you know, you don't get an opportunity, and you're going to get a legit opportunity if you're a first-round pick. Unfortunately, you know, I didn't get drafted at all. There were some teams that were interested in drafting me, Minnesota being one in the first round, but they weren't sure that I was 100% committed, which I'm not, to the NFL. And so they didn't, you know, they didn't want to pull the trigger and me not come and play. I had made a statement that, you know, if I wasn't drafted in the first round, that I would consider my other options, which meant that out of the first round, I was going to play football. But I didn't do it. They weren't so old that I was 100% committed to football, which at that time I was not. But, of course, if I'd have gotten drafted in the first round, I would have played.
Got you. And Charlie, so the NBA has you listed at 6'2". Are you not actually 6'2"?
No. I'm 6'2" in cleats, which, you know, we all play in cleats when you play football. Right. So, yeah. I'm 6'2" in cleats. Probably 6'1" in tennis shoes, depending upon the orthotics. But, you know, nonetheless, I'm 6 foot, 5'11" and a quarter, 6 foot, 6'1", 6'2". So, depending upon
somewhere in there.
Yeah.
All of that.
Yeah, all of the above.
All right. So you make the decision. You make the decision. Well, they kind of, you know, made the decision for you in a way. And you're in your rookie season, and in the NBA, you're in your rookie season. I've read some things. I wanted to see if you could say if it's true or not, that you got an offer during your NBA rookie season that from the Kansas City Chiefs to be the backup for Joe Montana.
Well, actually, that was during the NFL draft. At the time I was coming out, it was maybe 4 or 5 day draft. And the fifth round was on Monday. Kansas City called me to ask if I would be willing to consider being the backup to Joe Montana. And of course, that was a great offer because Joe Montana was one of my heroes. And we were very similar in a lot of ways. I just told them that, you know, they drafted me, you know, I appreciate it, but I wouldn't be 100%. I couldn't let them know 100% that I would, you know, choose football, because, you know, I was going, had an opportunity to be drafted in the NBA. At the time, I had no clue that I'd be a first-round pick in basketball in the NBA. And so it was really a faith walk. And, you know, God, you know, ordained my steps because he allowed me to go and pursue basketball after the draft at a really, really fast pace. And so I put a lot of time and effort into preparing for those NBA combines. You know, he opened the door through relationships and through work ethic and through upside, you know, and I was able to be drafted by the New York Knicks, 26th pick.
Yeah, 26th pick. And before we go definitely go and get some questions out of you from your New York Knicks days. I wanted to ask you about winning a national championship, because you've done everything in college football that you could possibly do as a quarterback, from the Davey O'Brien to, you know, Heisman, and also the first national championship in school history, right?
Yes, sir.
What can you remember about that moment and, you know, actually winning that game against Nebraska, right?
Nebraska. Mm-hmm. It was a game that we knew was going to be a tough one. Because the year before, we played them in the Orange Bowl, and we beat them 27-14. And the next season, people expected that to happen again because we had a great year. Lost one game to Notre Dame. And going to that game, people are expecting us to win the game easily like we did the year before. But we knew it was a championship game. I'm not sure if they had lost. I think they may have been undefeated at the time, and so, you know, it was one of those games that we knew what we had, we knew what they were going to bring, it became a defensive battle. They challenged us from an offensive standpoint. You know, our receivers, they challenged them. Our offensive line, they did some different things as far as stunts and a lot of different things, and so we had to try to figure it out. But we had prepared ourselves for, you know, everything. We were a veteran group, and we didn't play our best. And of course, they had something to do with that. But we made the necessary plays on offense to be able to give us opportunities, you know, to either kick field goals. I think we may have scored one touchdown the whole game. But we were able to drive the football up and down the field, just weren't able to score. But the key was our defense. Our defense came into the year. People were underestimating them because we had lost some very good football players, and the offense kind of overshadowed them from a media standpoint. But we had some really, really good football players on our defense. And that was really the key, because they held Tommy Frazier and the offense down pretty much the whole game. I think they may have scored two touchdowns one or two touchdowns during the game. But they during the rest of the time, you know, it was really shut down. And so we were able to overcome, you know, bad offense with defense, and we had some timely offense to be able to help us in that game. But the thing that I remember the most is the last drive. The last drive was an opportunity for us to kind of cement or close the game. And as a competitor, quarterback, and definitely offense, we were very competitive. We want to go out and close the game. And we were blessed to be able to do that. We made some plays when we needed to make some plays. We got a couple penalties to help us along on that drive. And, you know, when it's all said and done, those are the things that you're going to be remembered by. You know, what did you do when the game was on the line? And, you know, that's Michael Jordan, as LeBron. You know, people always, you know, talked about LeBron failing in the NBA Finals because he lost so many games. And, I mean, the guy was there. But, he, you know, he's won some as well. But yeah, that was an opportunity for us to win the game, and we did.
Yes, sir.
I want to get to the Knicks now. You draft.
Hold on, Chris. Let me – one more question before we go there. I was watching you and Anquan Boldin's live interview yesterday, and I seen that you mentioned about, you know, college athletes getting paid for their name and likeness and all that. Mm-hmm.
All right, we lost the sound for a second.
I can hear you.
I think he was going towards college athletes being paid.
Yeah, there you go. All right, yeah, for the name and likeness. So, and now the NBA G League has this new thing they're trying out with top NBA players. One is Jalen Green. He's from our hometown, Fresno, California. I know you're passionate and, you know, about, you know, making sure college kids get the right transition over to the pros. And just wanted to get your opinion on the thing with the G League and what they're doing with Jalen Green and a couple of other guys.
Well, I think the NCAA is working to try to, I'm going to say compete, but to be able to assist those athletes if that's what they want to choose. And, you know, as you have heard, I'm a guy that, you know, I want to be able to have options. And that's one of the things I teach the kids that I play, I coach. And whenever I go and talk, you know, to kids, I'm like, you know, you have options. And so that's the reason why I'm not a big proponent for, you know, one sport until a certain time, because if that's what you want to focus on when you're a junior or senior to prepare for or try to get a scholarship in that sport, then that's fine. But even still with that, you should play another sport that may be complementary to your sport. And so I'm for options. So if the G League is an option for a top-ranked high school player go for it. You know, we've seen, you know, LeVar Bell's boys, you know, take that route. I think his last name is Hampton. They've taken that route, you know, going to, you know, Europe. And if that's what you want to do and you're prepared for it and that's an option for you, I'm all for it. And in college, I'm all for guys being able to use their name and likeness to be able to do camps, be a sponsor for a car dealer. I just think there has to be some education on all those aspects, because the thing that, you know, keeps getting thrown out is he's signing a $500,000 contract. I think that's what people keep saying. And as we know, if you're living in California, $500,000 is not $500,000.
Right.
And that's like just, you know, yeah, I mean, that's just reality. And then people will say, well, you know, $250,000 is great for a high school kid. Yes, that is awesome as well, and I'm all for it. But how do we use that $250,000? Because you want to live, you want to splurge a little bit, and then people are going to be in your pocket. You got to pay your team out of some of that money. And so, you know, when you start looking at it, if you're not educated, someone can easily take you for what you thought you may have had, because you're not educated. You may have the wrong people around you. And so, and that happens even with a person who's gone to school for 4 years. And so that's why I think it's important that he has the right advisement to be able to help him, help whoever it is, help them along. I know the ball, you know, kid had his dad there. And so his dad, very knowledgeable, and he was able to make that jump because his dad was able to execute all of his, you know, all the things that he wanted to do, whether it was his deal on his team, sponsors. And so that's very beneficial if you have someone that you can trust to oversee or be your advisor. And that's all I'm saying. I'm not saying I'm not for it. I'm saying that I think especially kids that are in college, it could, you know, being a kid in college at one time, I would have loved to have been able to take advantage of my name and likeness, because I had a hot name, and there are a lot of people buying, you know, jerseys, 17 jerseys. And I was also, you know, featured on like a FSU pay card at one time. And so there are a lot of opportunities for that, that I would have loved to have. But the thing that I would suggest is I would try to run everything through the university so that I can have safeguard on, you know, the money, one, and two, not becoming overwhelmed. Because if you're a hot name, you're going to have a lot of people coming at you with deals. And now you're having to navigate school. You have to navigate trying to oversee your team and trying to, you know, win, trying to be a part of a football team, doing your part there. And it can become a big business, just like in the pros. But in the pros, you have so much time, you don't have to go to school. You have all your time to do your work, do community service. And as a kid, you know, that's a lot you have to navigate through. But it could also be a great learning ground for some of those guys as well, as they continue to pursue not just, you know, professional sports, but the next career, whatever that next career may be.
Definitely.
So good answer. Like I said, I'm just trying to move into the Knicks here because you spent a good 10 years there with New York. You played under Pat Riley. You played under Jeff Van Gundy, who we just recently had on the podcast. You've played against some greats in that 90s era as well. What is one of your fondest memories of playing with the Knicks?
Well, I would say, you know, making it to the NBA Finals was one of the finer moments because we were eighth seed that year. And, you know, it was a lockout year. And so we had some challenges. We had some new players, Latrell Sprewell, Marcus Camby, Kirk Thomas. And we were all trying to, you know, navigate our way through a shortened season. It was challenging because we had some injuries as well during the regular season, because we were playing like three games back to back, you know, three games in a row at one point, just to try to get 50 games in, I do believe. And so it was really, really tough on the body. And for us being new, we had to learn how to gel, and new players come from different systems, and coming into Coach Van Gundy's system was a, you know, bit of a challenge, right. And him trying to learn them. And so it took us some time, but we went on a six-game winning streak heading into the playoffs. And so we caught fire at the end. And once we caught fire, we were able to ride that momentum going into the playoffs. And, you know, we were able to upset Miami, who's the number one seed. And during that time, it was a five-game playoffs series, which always favors both teams. So it gives you an opportunity, you know, in five games. There were not as many 8-1 upsets, but there were a couple. In this day and age, you won't ever probably see a 1-8 upset, because in seven games, at some point, your talent's going to win out, and you have more depth because you're one seed. But for us, we had just as much talent as Miami, and in a five-game series, and even if it was seven, we still probably could have won the series because we had great talent as well. But we were able to win that series, and that catapulted us into, you know, going on and playing in the NBA Finals. But we knew it was going to be tough playing the NBA Finals against San Antonio, because we had lost Patrick to a calf injury. And then we had lost Larry in like game 3 or 4 in the Indiana series. You know, he had a sprained knee ligament. And so so he was hobbling, trying to play, but he ended up not being able to play in the finals. And so that left us shorthanded on depth. And we had two twin towers to try to compete against. And Tim Duncan was a handful as a rookie. And David Robinson was another handful. You know, he's 7 foot as well. And then they had some really good guards that we had to contend with. So their depth and their size just kind of overwhelmed us. And we just didn't have the depth or the size to be able to compete at the high level. So we were only able to win one game out of 5. But that was a great season for us. It was enjoyable, especially when we beat Indiana. I think it was game six or seven. I think we beat Indiana, and just the Garden, the way they appreciated the way we competed, and they kind of they stayed after the game and clapped and stand ovation. And so that moment was a great moment that, as I always talk about, sometimes you have to enjoy the moment because you may not ever get back there again. And so that was an enjoyable moment.
Yeah, what's up? And we talked, like Chris mentioned earlier, we had Jeff Van Gundy on the episode about – on the podcast about 2 episodes ago. And he mentioned something about you. He said, and I also seen this, you and Anquan talk about this on your live as well. You know, you're a Christian, you're a religious man. And he was like, but he was a killer. He said he'll pray for you, you know, before and after the game, but during the game, he'll cut your throat out. And with that attitude, I'm usually the guy that brings up the scuffles, and you were involved in a scuffle against that Miami Heat team but with the likes of a guy named PJ Brown. Could you? Oh, nice. Oh, we got Christians fighting and stuff. But what do you remember about that altercation between you and PJ Brown?
Of course, it was a heated game. All of our games against Miami were heated because the two teams were very, very much alike in a lot of ways. The coaches were alike. The styles were alike. The mindset was alike. And so it's just like a marriage. You know, when you have two people who are alike, you have a lot of altercations, a lot of discussions because you're alike. And so that was us. You know, we had a lot of competitive spirits, competitive moments, and that was one of them. There was something that went on before our altercation. I think a couple guys may have gotten ejected peacefully after their altercation. But then, you know, I went to box out PJ Brown, who, you know, I'm 6, whatever, and he's 6'11". And so I ended up boxing him out in his legs, to take away his legs so he couldn't jump. And he took a fence to it and, like, flipped me into the front row. And then we had this whole big, you know, altercation, which it wasn't peaceful. We had every, you know, guys coming from the bench, and, you know, and the moment wasn't to a point where it became a melee with fans and also players. And so, you know, a couple guys just trying to make sure that they took care and protected their own. And that was one of the reasons, you know, the reason why they have to stay on the bench ruling the NBA now is because of us in a lot of ways. Well, that's when it started. There were a lot of fights before us, but that's when it started. They had the rule where you can't get on the floor, can't put your toe on the floor if you're on the bench, and those types of things. But that happened, and, you know, the good thing about it is, you know, I learned from it, and we ended up losing that series because we were up 3-1, and we ended up losing that series because the last two games, we had multiple guys out at different times. I mean, we had guys, suspended. Right. We had a couple of guys suspended multiple games. Mm-hmm. And so we weren't able to get back on track, and they ended up winning the series. But, you know, the thing that I admired most was, you know, PJ and I, of course, we're good friends. And, you know, he supported my football program at one point. And if I pick up the phone today and call him, you know, we can laugh about it. And, you know, that's kind of what it's about. Because, I mean, you are who you are, you know, off the court, on the court, you're a competitor, and those things do happen. But the thing is are you that way all the time? And that wasn't me all the time. I was a competitor, yes. I competed at a high level. And, you know, I'm not going to kill someone, but I'm going to go out and compete. do as much as I can, you know, a little bit above the line, a little bit below the line, depending upon if you get caught. But that's neither here nor there, but I do compete at a high level and want to win. You know, that's what most people who are competitive, you know, they're going to compete. And because if they can do whatever they can do to gain an advantage, especially during that time, you know, it was more mind trying to get into guys' mind by playing physical and, you know, doing, you know, little things, grabbing, holding, you know, whatever it was, you trying to gain an advantage. And so that's what we did to try to win. That was just part of the tactics.
And also in that live, I'm stealing your whole live and whatnot, but like being a Christian, you asked Anquan, was it awkward starting a Bible study group in the locker room? but you didn't get to really tell your story on that. And I just wanted to know, you know, how'd that start with you and your teammates?
It really started, of course, I was a Christian going into the NBA. But there's a thing that I struggled with, and it was pornography. And when we were on the road, we would get in late, and one of the things I would do was go turn on television. And as we know, it was pay-per-view, and it was easy access. You're in a room by yourself, and that was something that I struggled with at that time. And, of course, being a Christian, I had a couple of brothers from the Church of Christ in New York challenged me on my faith. And when they challenged me on my faith, I had to make a decision. And it's just like, you know, a coach. You know, they challenge you in a certain area. You have to make a decision on whether you're going to put the time and effort in to better yourself. And that's what they did. And once I started to dig into the scriptures more and make sure that my faith was, you know, what I said it was before, I decided to reach out to Reggie White, the late Reggie White. Huh. Of course, as we know, he's the minister of defense, but he's also a minister, a preacher as well. And reached out to him, and he got us involved in CALLS, which was Christian Athletes Unite for Spiritual Empowerment. And that gave an opportunity to get into a network of NFL, NBA players. But what it did was he challenged me to start a Bible study. And I was like, well, I don't know how to lead a Bible study because I didn't really know the scriptures that well. And he was like, just get a book that may be able to guide you. And so we got a curriculum of a book. The Man God Uses, by the Huckabee family. And we started going through that on the road. And so as we all know, if you have a problem with something and you're trying to get rid of that problem or fix it, you can't try to get rid of it and not replace it with something. And so instead of me going to my room, I had to discipline myself. Not only I can discipline myself, it's through the scriptures to be able to hold me accountable to that, but also I had to have some brothers to be able to help me along the way. And so starting the Bible study kind of helped develop my relationship with those guys so that I could be accountable for my actions. And it also gave me something to do when I was on the road. And so that's kind of how we got started with our Bible study on the road. And of course, when we were in town, we had church and those types of things. Also had friends that we were, you know, having Bible study with over their house as well. But on the road was where I struggled. And I wanted to make sure that I had some safeguards, some accountability to be able to overcome, you know, the issue I had with pornography. And so, you know, that's the way it really started with, you know, Reggie sharing with me, you know, get a curriculum to start the Bible study. And then we went through, you know, throughout my tenure, we went through a few curriculums. Which definitely helped us, you know, along the way. And it helped strengthen our brothers. You know, Allen Houston was a good brother that developed and grew his relationship to where he is today. And, of course, Mark Jackson was there. Had Kirk Thomas come through. We had some other, you know, guys. Terry Cummins was there. Buck Williams, he was there. Mm-hmm. Chris Dudley. And so we had quite a few guys come through. Scotty Brooks was another guy that used to join our Bible studies. And so, you know, it was good for those guys as well. Once they got to the team and they saw that we were doing this on the road, they were very appreciative because most of those guys were Christians.
Nice, nice.
I'm actually going to take you away from sports for a second, because I'm compelled to ask your opinion on the current events right now. Just listen to you speak. I'm just interested in hearing the current events and the everything right now as far as George Floyd, just where we are as a nation with racism and things like that. Just, again, as a Christian man, your beliefs, what do you think – how do you think we move forward right now and the next step of things?
Well, you know, George Floyd, of course, has sparked what we've been going through for quite some time again. And, you know, Colin Kaepernick, I know I talked with Anquan yesterday about Colin Kaepernick and what he was kneeling for. Mm-hmm. His motive wasn't disrespecting the flag. It was to make a statement on social injustice. And so that is, you know, something that I think, you know, all of us who are of color have experienced at some point in time. At some point in time, we've experienced it in some form or fashion, whether we want to agree that it happened or not, but it does happen. And, you know, one of the things I'm, you know, appreciative of is, you know, all the people that are willing to step up and, you know, want to try to make change or have change happen. And just like Martin Luther King, when he was marching, he needed, you know, everyone's voice, you know, not just the black voice or the brown voice, but he needed the white voice as well, and everyone working together to be unified. And so one of the things I do know that won't ever be eradicated is evil. Evil is always going to be present. It happened in the Garden of Eden, and that's one of the things that we have a choice. And so evil will always be prevalent, but I believe that God is bigger than all those things. And my prayer is that we can have hearts that are evil, be able to change for the betterment of humanity, and not protecting certain people, but for doing wrong. I'll just say that certain people for doing wrong, and I think that's where the injustice comes in, when you see some getting through the loophole. Yeah. That may be in the system, that may be a system, a favorite. And then you see some that may not be a system favorite, you know, getting death penalty, getting more time for similar crimes. Yeah. And so I just think it's important that, you know, we get people, vote people in that have an understanding of just being fair. Of course, life is not going to be fair all the time. But we just want to see it happening sometimes for the good, you know, majority of the time. And I think, you know, having the right mindset in offices, people who are making laws, and, you know, yes, there are going to be protections, but for people, but when they overstep their bounds, they can't be above the law, in a sense. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if someone kills someone, they shouldn't be above the law. And they should get the same, you know, they should go through the process just as if a black person killed a white person. Or, you know, that direction. And as we've seen, when that does happen, it seems like justice is served and you get a high conviction and you're in prison longer. But when it's the other way around, it just seems like, and it more than likely happens this way.
Yeah.
Justice may be served, but the conviction is not higher. They may get, you know, 2 years and 2 years in prison and
back on
10 years of probation, or five years of probation, and mm-hmm. with the same crime. Yeah. And so that's where the injustice comes in, and putting people in, and it's not just black people that you want to vote in office, it's people who have a heart to want to do the right things. And also our lawmakers, you know, putting the right people in is going to fight for, you know, social equality and putting laws in place that is not just about favoring one system. I mean, one group of people.
Definitely. And you mentioned earlier, you was like, we need more than just, you know, the black voices to speak out and stuff. We need the white voices and everybody really. But yes. We had the other day, I'm sure you're aware, like the whole world, Drew Brees made the comments that he made about when asked about players kneeling, you know, for the national anthem. Just wanted to get your opinion on that and how he's been getting, you know, a lot of backlash from everybody. So just wanted to get your take on that.
Yeah. The thing that I'm kind of torn, because he was speaking from his experience.
Yes.
He was speaking from what he thought. And of course, it wasn't what I would say and what I would think. And I think that's something that we're having to work through as well, to hear everyone's voice, whether we agree or disagree. That's not the issue. And yes, he missed the point on why he was kneeling, but that was his point. I mean, that was his thought process, and it's very similar to, yes, sometimes we do miss the mark on why certain things happen, but that's the way I see it. And yes, you know, he went back and retracted, and that's what humility looks like. And that's what I wish some of our leaders would do. Even though in his mind he is right, but for him to go and say, you know, this is, you know, what I said was, you know, probably wasn't hitting the mark on why it all happened, but that was his thought process. And I've been in this situation before as well, where, you know, I was having to deal with a Jewish issue where someone wrote something that I said, they took a quote out of me saying, talking about the Jewish, the blood of Jesus being on their hands and those types of things. Right. And I went through that whole issue, and I had to learn, you know, I learned from it, because that wasn't what I said. And it was taken out of context, but I had to go through that time, and I had to humble myself, because I knew what I said and what I meant, and it was, you know, what I thought was right and accurate, but it divided a whole group of people, and so I had to go and learn about the Jewish culture, which I did, and was great. And I've had, you know, had instances where, you know, I got booed at home in New York, because that's a, you know, big town with Jewish people in it. And then while I was on the road one game in Dallas, there's a young man, I didn't know him, but we were getting prepared and ready for the second half. And so I was shooting the layups. And doing those necessary things. And every time I would circle back around in front of him, he was calling me out of my name. And I didn't know the guy. And, you know, I kept going until the last, like, minute or so. And we were getting ready to go in and bring it in for, you know, the third quarter. And so I just politely walked over to the guy and introduced myself, because apparently he didn't know my name. Because he was calling me out of my name. And so I just politely went over and introduced myself and let him know, I'm Charlie Ward, and I just want to make sure you understand and know I have no ill feelings towards you or your race, and don't always believe what you read. And I just politely walked off, and I extended my hand to shake his hand, And I'm not sure. I don't think he did shake my hand, or he may have. But the thing I want to say is we have to agree to disagree and let people share their thoughts and feelings, even though they may have missed the mark on why something, you know, happened. And yes, I understand, but that didn't make him not a very good teammate. That didn't make him not a very good person, which I saw a lot of people trying to say he's not a good person, he's not a good teammate because he missed the mark on that. And I think I'm included. I think we all included. We missed the mark on some things. And so we got to appreciate that he went back and said, I missed the mark. And people saying, well, the apology was half-hearted. And whether it was half-hearted, it happened. Because sometimes people don't do it at all. And so I think we got to stop looking at when people do things, how they're doing it. And yes, if it's half-hearted, God's going to bring that up at some point in time in his life and expose him for it if it was half-hearted.
I have to, real quick, I just got to agree with you. I felt the same exact way. I felt that as a Black community, we have to be careful when people are they make mistakes or are not understanding of where our position is, that we don't just cancel or just throw them away, especially when you take the effort to say, okay, listen, I messed up. I didn't understand your point of view. So here I am. I spoke to my teammates, my friends. You know, that was one of the things that was important to me. I saw in his apology that he reached out and spoke to people first and then came back to the table and said, listen, this is where I'm wrong at. So to me, that was sincere. And I think I thought that's what we were looking for was understanding somebody, for people to say, listen, I don't get it, but I'm willing to get it. So, I think he apologized. Let's move forward. It's a growing moment, right. and not a throwing away kind of moment. So I definitely appreciate
right.
you on that one.
Yeah, and I'm like, you know, he really just dropped the ball. Like when everything he said was right at the beginning, those first, I don't know, 8 or 10 words where he said, he wouldn't accept anybody, you know, disrespecting the flag. I think, you know, I think his apology was sincere as well. But you know, like we have to be, it's important for us to be, like you said earlier, Chris, it's important for us to be understanding that we go have differences. And, you know, even if he apologized, he may still not feel, well, he probably don't feel right. what we feel right. and he probably never will. And right. we have to accept that and still be able to move forward and continue to grow as a nation. Cause it's not, you know, like we have coworkers, we have teammates who, you know, we're together on the field or on the court or at work, but when we leave, you know, we may be good friends at work, but when we leave, we right. go to our families and, you know, our, right. you know, our regular life. So it's, you know, when somebody it's different, if it's like a family member, do that to you or whatever, it'll hit you a little harder. But I think, it was definitely unfortunate. Hopefully good comes out of it. I've seen a bunch of different opinions about that, and hope some good come out of it.
Well, I do believe with him being a Christian, it's probably eating at him that he missed the mark because he just he spoke what he truly feels about the kneeling. And that's his personal opinion. But this is where I hope we can get to as a nation is, yes, we may miss the mark on what other people may feel about a certain situation, but you should have some type of conviction that you missed the mark. And I think a lot of times in our nation, those that feel like they're doing what's best for as Miles McPherson, you might know Miles, he has a book called The Third Option. And he talks about how the world is centered around a built for right-handed people. And, you know, if you're left-handed, you're you're a small minority in our country. And so everything you have to navigate your way through around to be left-handed. And so everything's built for a right-hander. And it's very similar, you know, to our country. Everything's built for the people who, you know, really run the country, which is, you know, white American males. And so, but we got to get to a point where, just like Drew, it has to be eating at you because you missed the mark. You didn't get it right. Yeah. And we go back to Colin Kaepernick, and we talked about this yesterday. You know, the owners, it should be eating at them that they missed the mark on giving Colin Kaepernick another opportunity because of the stance that he took. And but no one has felt convicted enough to be able to give him an opportunity, because you can't tell me he's not one of the best 32 quarterbacks in the NFL, even at this day and time, yes, being out for 3 years or however long he's been out. And so hopefully we can get to a point where we can say, I was wrong. And that's the thing that I don't think, you know, our country's gotten to.
President, excuse me.
Say again?
I said the president.
Well, you said it, I didn't. But, well, you know, it's just we got to get to a point where we say, yes, I was wrong in this area, and it should be eating at you that you can't sleep at night because you're like, I didn't get it. I missed the mark. And even though I was sharing, or I know what is right, this is not what the system says is right. And so now you're in that conflict. That's where the conflict should come. I know what's right, and the system says it's not right. So now I have this conflict. I don't think we're at that point yet. Until we get to that point is when we will start to see change.
Right. I don't know if you saw the video that a lot of the NFL superstars put out last night, in which they called for the NFL to give them the freedom to protest peacefully. They called for the NFL to say that Black Lives Matter, and they called for the NFL to do more than just words. Of course, the NFL is a lot less of player-driven as the NBA. The NBA players, they have a lot more power, a lot more freedom. Do you think, or do you see something like that happening where the NFL, because this is something, speaking on Kaepernick, this is something that I feel like I'm waiting for. I'm saying, you know, at this point, do we have a coach, a GM, a owner, somebody come out and say, listen, we got it wrong. We got it wrong on Kaepernick's front. Do you see that possibly happening, even with the players coming out and demanding that right now?
If I had to pray and hope, I hope someone would. Just, it doesn't take but one.
Exactly.
And it's one rebel coach to say, you know, I want him on my team because he can help us win football games. And we'll have to deal with, you know, whatever comes with that scrutiny. And so it's going to follow him. And he has to understand and know that if he does get another opportunity, that he can't continue, you know, say the fight or the protest.
Yeah.
He's made his point. One has been well taken. And now it's time for him to kind of move on and do things behind the scenes or continue what he's doing today. And I think, you know, the NFL, definitely the NBA, they, when this all this kneeling stuff came out, they became unified that no one was going to do it. And, you know, they would have other forms to be able to do it. And so, you know, it was a unified front. Even though they wanted to, you know, I'm sure there are players that wanted to kneel during the national anthem. But they found a way to become a unified front without any of the kneeling during the national anthem. And so I think it's – I asked my man Troy Vincent the other day when I was, you know, interviewing, and, of course, he didn't tell me, which, you know, was the right answer because he wanted the right, you know, things to come out the right way. But I do believe they have a plan of action with more protests, kneeling, those types of things. I think that's still been happening. But it's time for us to move forward. As Anquan talked about yesterday, we made that statement that kneeling, social injustice, yes, we understand that part, but what's next? Right. The next part is to go out and vote, start, you know, pushing voters to the voting, you know, booths and getting the right people in and stop voting party lines. You know, vote people because of, you know, what they believe in, and doing your homework in that area. And so I do believe that the NFL, NBA can have an active voice in helping people understand, you know, what is going on, because I think this has gotten the attention of many to become unified in some form or fashion. And yes, we need change to happen, but the next change is changing a wave of leaders.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And you know, we ain't gonna hold you up too much longer, but I did have I got like two more questions for you. Taking you back to New York, my brother has a podcast, and he interviewed Chris Childs, one of your former teammates. And he talked about his relationship currently with the New York Knicks. And I just wanted to know your story right now. Do you have a good relationship? Do you have a relationship at all with the New York Knicks? And, you know, what do you think about their situation they're in?
One of the things my mom always taught me was, my mom and dad always taught me, were whenever you leave somewhere, leave a bridge, build a bridge. Never burn a bridge, regardless if your experience there was not fruitful, I mean, not good. Never burn bridges when you leave. And, of course, I haven't had very many bad experiences. I've had a couple here and there, but I've never burned bridges. I always built relationships with people because people treated me with respect. Even though sometimes they didn't agree with me on certain things, but I've always, you know, left, you know, in a good fashion. And I'm gonna share this with you. And you know, the Knicks drafted me. They gave me an opportunity, and I appreciate that. Even though management, the ownership has changed, I'm still appreciative of the New York Knicks. So if I call and ask for tickets, you know, I'm able to get them because I have a relationship with them. And if I go to New York, you know, and they have a game, I get an opportunity to go. The biggest thing, of course, there are not many James Dolan fans, but I'm one because I built a relationship with him. I'm able to have talks with him about certain things, and we can agree to disagree on certain things, but that's the beauty of having a relationship. And he supported all of my teams with donations. And, you know, that's why, you know, he has his faults just like we all have faults, and things he may do or say may not be accurate or right. But when you have a relationship with someone, you're able to talk to them and give them insight, whether they agree or disagree on it. But I'm grateful, you know, for his heart to want to see what I am doing and support that. And so, you know, there are a lot of, you know, people that don't like him, which, you know, that's their prerogative.
Right.
But for me, being a New York Knick, and they say once a New Yorker, once a Knick, always a Knick, you know, I'm going to always be grateful for, you know, for that organization. And, you know, the reason, one of the reasons they're not successful, haven't been successful lately, is they just haven't had a stability in the front office. And so when you have a lot of instability, in the front office, you're not going to have great success. And the crazy part about it is Mr. Dolan owns the Rangers and the Knicks. And one organization has had great success or greater success than the other one over the past years that he's been the owner. And so I don't know what the difference is, but, you know, they're still owned by the same guy. And so I just think as far as the Knicks are concerned, once they can get the stability in the front office, you know, they'll be a lot better off. And even today, you know, with Leon Rose taking over and Scott Perry, the GM, not sure about his future, you still have that unsettling of understanding of where you are as an organization. Because he didn't have a contract passed, you know, this season. And so, you know, that's – until they can get all the levels lined up, the president, the GM, the head coach, all on the same page, that's what's going to equal to success. And that's what you see in most of the successful organizations and even programs, college, high school, doesn't matter. When everyone's lined up with the same vision, and of course you have the same vision, you're gonna have great success in supporting one another.
Awesome. I agree with you. I actually talked with Mark a couple weeks ago regarding the Knicks. I said the same thing. I feel like with Leon coming in, I feel like changing of the guard somewhat, and I feel like they're in place right now to line everything up to start heading towards championships. And with that on my mind, my last question to you is, the NBA is coming back to the wonderful world of Disney. Who do you see winning the championship?
I mean, at this point, I mean, it can be anyone, you know, because everyone's been off the same amount of time. Of course, there were – I know they just opened up facilities here recently. Uh-huh. Within the past, few weeks or month or so. And so, I mean, whoever's in the playoffs at this time, anyone can, because there's not going to be, I don't know how they're going to do, you know, if they're just doing the playoffs, everyone's starting at the same point where, you know, there aren't very many games to continue where you left off. We know the favorites of the teams that were playing well up until the time, you know, it was cut. Right. The season was suspended. And so, I mean, you're still going to have your favorites, you know, the Lakers, you know, Milwaukee in the East. You got the Clippers. You know, I heard that James Harden lost weight. So, you know, in 2 months, they're off. You know, I don't know how he's going to come back. He may be better, he may not. And so there's a lot of factors that it's kind of a wait and see, but it's very similar to the time that we made it to the finals.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be probably, I don't know if there'll be 7 games, you know, each round to be able to get the playoffs in. But it can go either way at this point. I think anyone has a chance, and I think that's the part that may make it fun. Mm-hmm. You know, that every team will have an opportunity to at least, you know, hold a crown, even though it's a asterisk season, asterisk mark by the season. But you can't say that to the team that may have been the AC, you know, going into the suspended season. And they come, you know, get to the finals. You know, they're like, who cares? You know, we're in the mix just like everyone else. And so I just think anyone can win the championship this year.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
I'll give it to you, Mark, but I actually believe an 8th seed is going to be the 1 seed this year in the East. Go ahead, Mark.
That's possible.
Yeah, so we go have a repeat of the New York Knicks. Well, my last question for you is, you know, since you're a dual sport guy, even though I've read somewhere you play a little tennis too.
I play.
But being that you play basketball, football, I want to know, who do you think is the greatest quarterback of all time, and who do you think is the greatest NBA player of all time?
The greatest quarterback?
Yeah.
Of all time?
Of all time.
I was a huge fan of his when it comes to just being a great leader. One of my heroes would be, you know, he was consistent in the way he went about his business. I'm talking about Joe Montana. I know people thought about it, they're talking about Brady. I'm a Joe Montana fan. Of course, Brady was one of the best as well. And, I mean, you know, you got a big list of 10, you know, quarterbacks when it comes to greatest of all time. But, I was a Joe Montana fan. And, you know, he won championships as well. So if that was the case, then, you know, I would choose Joe Montana as a quarterback, because he's more like me, I guess, in some form or fashion. Basketball-wise, I mean, you know, you got your debates for Michael and LeBron and Kobe. If you want to go back to Wilt Chamberlain, Oscar Robertson, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Isaiah Thomas, you name it. It's just a matter of who you want to choose, what area you come from. I know for me, when it comes to era, I was in the era of Michael Jordan, and so I got the beginning stages of Kobe and LeBron. I didn't play against Larry Bird or Magic. I don't think I played against Magic. If I had to choose during my era, since that's the time that I played, I would say Michael Jordan.
Okay. That was a good one. I was going to try to bait you into saying something crazy on here.
Like I said, it's other people, of course, will have to come with all they would come with all their stats and on why LeBron is better and why Kobe is better. And my whole gist is, I live next to a cow pasture, and when I ride by the cow pasture, there's not one cow in the cow pasture. There are many cows in a cow pasture. There's a big pasture out there. And so when we start talking about goats, we can do the same thing. We can put a lot of people in that goat pasture. And so when it comes to the naming one person, we can name our one and let's throw a pasture. And so when we pass by, we have a big goat factory out there with all the people that we have chosen to be the number one GOAT in whatever sport it is. And so I just, you know, people getting these big, heavy debates on who's what and coming up with all these stats. I'm like the cow pasture. Let's put them all in that pasture and say they're all GOATs and let them, you know, enjoy one another's, you know, company.
Hey, I haven't heard it put like that ever, but that was great. I like that, man. Once again, we want to thank you for joining us. If you want to shout out your Instagram and Twitter handle, social medias, or any foundations you got going on, you can let the listeners know.
Most of my handles are at Charlie Ward Official. And of course, I have a foundation Carter Charlie Ward Family Foundation. And so if you want to Google, you know, what we're doing, you can do that. CharlieWard.org is where if you want to purchase my book, The Athlete, if you purchase it off of my website, I'll sign it and we'll send it back. Signed copy, or a picture, however you want to do it, you can go to charlieward.org to get those items. But I appreciate you guys having me on a minute to six, and y'all have a great weekend.
Thank you. And once again, y'all, it's your boy Mark Haynes, MH the Champ, along with my co-host
Chris Perry at Chris Perry, Chris.Perry.
And this is a minute till six, and we out.
Peace.